This conference will now be recorded.
All right, we're all set.
All right, so the meeting was called to order at 1:01. We have myself, Scott Gilmartin, Karen Jarmak on board. We have Alex, and I see someone at the end of the room, can't tell who.
Kevin.
Oh, hi, Kevin.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine, thank you. And we have Sharon. Okay, motion to approve the minutes of the meeting of October 18th.
I'll move.
Oh, I'll second. That moved, I'll second.
All in favor, please say aye.
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 Okay, boy, it's been over a year since our last meeting. Another COVID victim here. Boom. All right. Well, Alex or Kevin, somebody's going to bring us up to date.
I'll let Alex walk you through where we're at.
Thank you.
Okay. So the committee has the legislative package that we put together for 2021. Most of these are carryovers from last year, since there was not a true legislative session. We're carrying most of the proposals over from last year. But just two of them that I want to note particularly. The first one relates to the markings on meteorological evaluation towers. This is one that the committee approved actually a couple of years ago. It's kind of a contorted path. So back in 2017, we were informed by the NTSB about a finding and recommendation that they had that all states enact marking requirements for meteorological evaluation towers. These are temporary towers that are put up. Generally, they stand under the 200-foot threshold that requires FAA coordination through the 7460 process, but they are usually, they're temporary towers. Usually they're used to determine whether a site is viable for wind energy. But like I said, they're temporary. There's no kind of consistent marking. So there have been a number of accidents across the country that have been attributed to, aircraft striking these meteorological evaluation towers. So we pursued this proposal a couple of years ago during the state legislative session. During that time, a federal piece of legislation, the FAA reauthorization bill at the time, actually required these markings on a federal level. So at that point, we decided that we wouldn't kind of waste any more political capital on a bill that would just be redundant with federal requirements. So we abandoned the state bill with the expectation that the federal requirements would be enough to satisfy NTSB. Just last January, I believe it was, I'm sorry, February, the NTSB came back and said that they are not satisfied with the FAA bill, even though it does exactly what they're looking for. They're concerned that the FAA rulemaking process is too lengthy, and they would like to see us enact this on a state level anyways. So it's a relatively non-controversial bill. We don't think there should be any issues. No one has raised any issues with it in the time that we have talked about it at the legislature, so we're not anticipating any problems, but just wanted to make sure that the committee understood the background on that particular proposal. And then the other one I wanted to touch base on was the retirement bill. We talked about it ad nauseum, so I won't go into the details about the bill, but I bring it up just because we had discussed, I believe, last year, the potential that if we were not successful getting the retirement provisions last year, that we would potentially look to abandon the proposal in the future, just because we were concerned that it could be doing us more harm than good. But we think it's important to give it another shot this year, not only because of the financial impact. You know, when we first were proposing this, one of the big kind of draws to that level of savings was that it would help us with the general aviation system subsidy issues, but deficit issues. But now it's much more important on a Bradley level, you know, from a financial perspective, but also when it comes to the airlines, because the airlines for years have been harping on the fact that our fringe costs are just way out of whack compared to competitors. So especially now when the airlines are all reducing frequencies and reducing operations across the country and they're really picking winners and losers between airports, we think it would be very attractive for them if we were able to show them that we were able to get this done for them after all the years looking. We were able to achieve the savings as well, which naturally accrues to their benefit. So we still think it's important to move forward with it this year. It's going to be a difficult ask still, regardless of the condition that we're in, but we still think it's important. So if there are any other questions regarding the package from the committee.
On that item, Alex, has any airline raised it this year? Has it come up recently? I'm sure that you're right, that they do have a checklist somewhere of airport A, airport B, airport C, da 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 da. And this has got to be on that list, and it's got to be high in that list. But I'm just curious as to whether or not it has actually come up, you know, in the past few months.
Yeah, it has, Mike. You know, as we had to talk to them about extending the agreement that expired last June, we had those conversations in terms of how we're going to stabilize their rates and cut costs. And this is always at the top of the list, this along with the cost of public safety here at the airport. And when you think that through, it's really the same issue. It's tied to the retirement. We just recently met with them again. That was the end of September, where we talked about the need now to sit down and talk about what happens after this one-year extension. And yet again, you know, they're talking about how are we going to stabilize costs for them to be able to sign on to what they consider a long-term agreement, which we're trying to propose a five-year agreement. So this is going to continue to be out there and continue to loom large. You know, as I've said in the past, how we've been able to balance some of this is, you know, we've been able to present good costs to them by deferring other things we probably should have been either putting more maintenance into or constructing here at the airport. You know, so when you start to have all of these issues of, you know, for example, the sanitary system here is going to have to be replaced real soon. When you have to start, you know, paying for those things, I can't use the savings there to continue to balance their costs. So this is just going to continue to be out there.
I wonder if it's possible to put together perhaps a for our benefit, this committee particularly, like a list of the top five issues that we are looking at now in terms of maintaining our competitiveness over the long term or over the short term and then over the long term, so that each of us know that and that we in our own discussions wherever can be aware of it and be able to, you know, bring it up and be fluent in talking about these things so that it doesn't get to be a surprise to anyone. And that this is one of the top, you know, the top five issues that we have. I think it would be helpful. Karen, what do you think? Karen, what do you think on that? Do you think that would be helpful to have, you know, so that we have a talking points when we happen to be in conversation with somebody who can do something about it, you know? You're on mute.
I think having those talking points very succinctly is certainly helpful, but we know that there's going to be significant resistance to it, but it sounds to me like there's a very, very compelling argument why it's important and why it's critical. And I think it has to be presented in a way that makes that abundantly clear. And I'm just wondering, you know, if pointing to some of the other airports, you know, showing or demonstrating in some way that this has become a critical issue for Bradley. If there's a way that we can better do that, may help, you know, with the success of this.
Scott, we can certainly do that. We did put together kind of a white paper that took a look at our retirement costs and compared them to the competing airports, Rhode Island, JFK, Boston, and it presents a really compelling picture as to why the airlines have this concern. So we can certainly get that to you. In terms of, you know, the top five listing that Mike is talking about, I'm not too sure I could point to five. I could certainly give you probably three things that we hear from the airlines, you know, repeatedly, but certainly the top two become the retirement cost and the cost of public safety. But as you said, we've done surveys in the past on public safety. It's not their base salary. You know, what the state police are getting paid is relatively reasonable with what a public safety officer at another airport gets paid. It, again, comes back to the retirement. So if I had to tell you today, what are the two things that the airlines complain about? It's those two things. And as I said, we can give you some pretty detailed information that illustrates this retirement issue that we're way out of step with the rest of the industry.
Right, but my it's not just showing that. Can we make the statement that Bradley is in danger of losing whatever, X airline or X flights, or how do we put this in more stark terms? That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's the case we've been making for many years now. We're pointing out that, you know, it has the potential to really constrain airline growth here at the airport. I guess, you know, what we're going to try to get across is this becomes even more critical now that you're dealing with this pandemic issue, and that, you know, airlines themselves are contracting in terms of the size and scope of what they plan to do coming out of the pandemic. So if you're not competitive to begin with, you can imagine what's going to happen after the pandemic. I'm not too sure we could sit here and say, oh, because of this, you know, we have lost X amount of flights, or we're not going to get X amount of flights. That's a difficult thing to quantify that way. But we could certainly illustrate, you know, where we were pre-pandemic, having the airlines complain about it, and where we are in the pandemic and having the airlines still complain about it. And I think, you know, the case is there that if your flight activity is down by 60% off of what it was pre-pandemic, and the airlines have concerns about your costs, you're not going to be one of the winners to you know, get your 60% back.
Well, I think definitely let's do what we can in that regard, and maybe in our thinking, Scott, you know, over the next month or so, we can put together some thoughts of not just this, but on the other side of the equation, you know, what have we been able to do in a positive sense that has been has resulted in a favorable activity by the airlines. For instance, the testing, you know, that's hot on everyone's mind that we did introduce that, and you know, there was sort of almost a direct response from JetBlue in terms of increasing flights from here. You know, so there's some things that we've been able to do that are positive, and there's some things that we're still stuck on that are negatives. If we can, you know, somehow just put a few things together so that we understand that and can be, you know, as I said before, kind of fluid and talking about that with discussions that we get into with folks, I think it would be helpful in the long run. Doesn't have to be a big deal, but just something that that we can point to, you know, that certain things have positive reactions and there are other things that have negative ramifications, and that we're trying to put everything on a positive as if we can. Okay, I think we've talked that one through. What else do we have here on the list? Alex?
Yeah, so just wanted to talk this through with the committee. And this is a conversation that I think we had a year or two ago as well. And there were mixed reactions then. And to be honest, we have mixed reactions now as well. But one of the things that we're talking about is how do we get more traction with a larger number of legislators? We certainly have good relationships with a number of them, but how do we kind of increase that stable that we have? And, you know, we don't have the benefit of being an agency, a state agency, or even another quasi-public agency that gives grants or partners on development deals across the entire state, like some of them do. But what we still do have is, you know, we have 6 airports that cover a pretty wide geographic area of the state. And so how do we use that to get more legislators involved, you know, especially when it comes to the GA airports? One of the things that we were talking about is, would it make sense, perhaps on a targeted basis, to engage some of the tenants and some of the stakeholders more to make them aware not only of what our priorities are, but to also listen to them and hear, you know, what some of their priorities would be down in the legislature as well, and see in what cases we may be able to partner with them and kind of make a united front for, you know, the local legislators to that particular tenant. So, you know, naturally that's a double-edged sword. You run the issue, you run the risk of, you know, creating connections that could come back to backfire on you in the future. And I know that was one of the concerns that the committee raised in the past when this has been discussed, and it's a legitimate issue that we've been talking about internally as well. But just wanted to reach out again and just kind of kickstart that conversation again and see what committee members would think about potentially, you know, engaging more with tenants and stakeholders on legislative matters.
Can I ask a question? Do they, so are these various tenants and stakeholders, do they have also their own associations that do lobbying, so it would sort of build that whole effort more?
I think in some cases they might. You know, for example, some of them may be, they may be coordinating with AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. But a number of them are also, you know, and some of them also may be involved with NFIB or with CBIA, but, you know, those would be much larger organizations that they'd be working with. This would be more targeted towards, you know, the aviation industry, and a number of them are also small operators who may not be engaged with other groups at all.
I think it makes sense also because sometimes if there's something on the CAA's legislative agenda that they'd be willing to cross onto their agenda, some of these groups, it shows that there's broader support than just singularly the CAA. So I don't know that, I don't know if you guys think is there a downside to it that I'm missing here?
I think the concern is really more just that, you know, when you start to you know, bring folks into the fold who aren't used to working with the legislature. You know, how do they act when they're interacting with the legislature? When it actually comes time for meetings or calls or letters even. And then, you know, if you are helping form those connections, at some point does that kind of recoil? And when they have an issue with a term of their contract, you're causing yourselves more problems when they're going to the legislators that you helped, you know, form those bonds with. So there is some level of risk there, but, you know, what we probably, I think, would do to at least start is just have more informal conversations with them, kind of on an educational basis, to let them know about the types of things that we're pushing for, hear from them the types of things that they are interested in down at the legislature, see where there may be some commonalities, some places where you can partner with them on. And then that also gives kind of a an ability to understand what their capacity is, what their, how well they would do interacting with the legislature, and seeing then, you know, how you might be able to partner with them moving forward. So probably would kind of dip the toe in the water, but rather than, you know, reaching out to a bunch of tenants and saying, hey, let's set up meetings with legislators, it would probably be more informal to start.
Alex, how many tenants or entities do you think would fall into this category?
I think that's really going to vary, and I mean, nationally by particular issue, but, you know, I would see us engaging with, you know, all of the airlines here, the fixed-based operators, but, you know, from time to time, you could even be bringing in off-airport parking guys if, you know, there were the issues of mutual concern, and, you know, I think that's one of the areas that Alex was trying to reference, that, you know, if you start dealing with the off-airport guys, let's face it, there are going to be times where we're on the opposite side of the table with issues. But I think generally, you know, our focus most likely would be with the airlines as well as with the FBOs and the cargo operators here at the airport.
And would you be looking to try to motivate their employees, or would it be at a more senior level?
I think to start, it would be at a more senior level. You know, I mean, who knows how this would manifest itself over time, but I think certainly, you know, as Alex talked about, it would be very targeted, and I think it would be targeted to the senior level.
You know, and it wouldn't necessarily need to be like a letter writing campaign or anything like that where you're looking for volume of people, but I think it still would just be effective hearing from you know, business owners in legislators' districts about the concerns that they have and the things that they need as an aviation-related business in order to succeed in the state.
No, I mean, directionally, I think it makes sense. I'm just trying to better understand what the approach would be.
Yeah, I think it would be important to kind of feel some of them out first, like I said, before really getting them engaged with the legislature. I think, you know, having those at least initial conversations with, if they have government affairs people, with their government affairs people, but if not, then just with their leadership of the individual entity to understand more about how they feel about some of the things that we're pushing for, and also, you know, how they view the legislature and how they view some of the major issues down there. So I think probably there needs to be some groundwork set before kind of firmly committing to any type of direction with any individual tenant. But I think that's probably the best way to go about doing it.
Aaron, do you have any further thoughts on that? My thinking is go ahead, Scott.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, directionally, I think it makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's, I think there's some risk involved, obviously, because their interests are going to be their interests first and foremost. And if it comes up against something that we would like, and they would like something else, more importantly, I wouldn't want to get into a, you know, I'll support your thing if you support my thing, kind of a deal. You know, I think there is some risk here, but I also think that it makes sense to put your toe in the water and see if there is any interest in their part. On their part in working with us on things, and get a feel for whether they'd be strictly looking to feather their own nest, or whether they'd be happy to work together with us on things that would be a benefit to the two of us. So I'd say, yeah, go ahead and open some doors, get some feelings, but be ready to step back if it seems like it's going to go in a direction that you're not happy with. So I'd say go forward and give it a shot.
Okay,
Scott, you all right with that? Scott?
Mike, definitely. Mike, okay. I apologize. Unfortunately, I've got a 1:30 conference call that I can't avoid. Is there anything else that you need me on the line for from a meeting perspective?
I don't think so. Alex, do you think so?
No, I don't think so. Did we just still need to vote the legislative items?
Okay.
2021 priorities?
Sure. Scott, do you want to make a motion on that? We'll vote on it, and then you can sayonara.
I would make a motion that we endorse the legislative priorities just discussed, and that is my motion.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye. Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you. Alex, you have your motion.
And I'll let you continue, and I hope to see you all soon.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye.
Are there further items to come before us?
No, that was it.
I think we just want to stay a little loose as we see how relations with government go. What if things open up or they don't open up? You know, just keep us aware of that so that we can be prepared to act if you need or want us to. And otherwise, have at it. Okay.
Sounds
Karen?
Good.
Karen, do you have any further thoughts?
No, thank you.
I'd be happy to accept a motion from you that we adjourn.
I motion we adjourn.
I second it.
Thank
in favor?
You.
Aye. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks. I'll talk to you guys in a half hour.
Okay. Thank you.
See ya. All right. Bye. Hi, Sharon. Sharon, what happened to Ireland? Ireland shut down again.
It shut down again. You can't go more than 5 kilometers.